Is there a second?
Susan Whetstone, second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mario Zangari, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye. It's been moved and seconded and approved. So we will jump to item three. Nancy Calusa. Nancy? Did we lose Nancy? Nancy, can you hear me? Okay, we will put a hold on Nancy's presentation and move to, let's see, item four, item five. Item four and five are information only. Item six, disability retirement examinations. Is Carolyn on? Carolyn, do we need to go into executive? Is Carolyn on? No.
Madam Chair, this is Mark Petrosimone. I'd like to move the item, item six.
Is there a second?
Susan Whetstone, second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mario Zangari, aye.
Michael Gormany, aye.
Justin Elker, aye.
Thank you. It's been approved that the reexaminations, as stated, will go forward. The service-connected disability retirement. How do the trustees want to move forward on this?
Madam Chair, this is Mark Petrosimone. I've read the Yale Medicine Internal Medicine report and would like to move the item seven, please.
There a second?
Susan Whetstone, second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mario Zangari, aye.
Michael Gormany, aye.
Justin Elker, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye. It's been moved and properly seconded, and the service-connected disability retirement of James Stevens will remain, has been approved. I'm sorry. Would someone like to move the payment of bills?
I'm Mario Zangari. I make a motion to pay the bills, stated and attached.
Is there a second?
Madam Chair, I second it, but I have a question on the bill.
Discussion. I have a question as well. Trustee Petrosimone.
On the invoice for Brennan Saltzman, down on September 15th, it says review file of former firefighter for purchase surface credit and fire contract. I sent email to Dave Mandel and Leanna. Is that on the right bill?
That is in the wrong bill.
That is on the wrong bill. Okay.
Thank you very much. Sorry. Yeah,
I had the same question.
That needs to be moved.
Okay.
The bottom number. We'll send a corrected bill.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
So we will not vote on the approval of the Brenner Saltzman bill this month.
Well, I would hope you would, because it's a flat fee of $6,000. So when we subtract the $100, it would be $6,350. We've said $300, right? It would be $6,150. Is that right? But it would be reduced to $6,000 no matter what once that's removed.
Okay.
I will move the bill with the correction stated.
We have a motion on the table that we need to remove first and then restate the motion. Okay. So we're going to restate your motion.
Mark? Approve the payment of bills, but on the Brenner Saltzman bill to make the correction that we just talked about on 9/15. And upon that correction, approval.
Is there a second?
Mario Zingari seconds that the bill for Brenner Saltzman's is $6,000, period.
Any additional discussion? All in favor?
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mario Zingari, aye.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Justin Ellicker, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye. So the bills have been approved. Let's move
Thank
back.
Thank you up. Very much. And I can apologize.
Okay. We'll go back to item three at this time, administrative matters. Beachmore, Fonte, and Ault. Nancy?
Nancy's on the phone, but she's muted. Nancy, can you unmute yourself?
Hello, Nancy.
I see Nancy's iPhone. Nancy, you're on mute.
Yeah, she might be having a connection issue. She keeps signing in and signing back out.
Okay, with that said, let's move forward to our investment report. Raymond James.
Okay, good morning. Leanna or Taylor, if you could pull up the performance report.
Yep, give me just a second.
No problem. So obviously, not going to be the happiest of days, but markets have been in utter turmoil since the beginning of the year. And we're now, you know, this is through the third quarter, so through September 30. And just can't seem to get any positive news out there. Okay, if you could scroll down to page, I think, 4. Actually, let's stop on page 3, maybe. Let's start there. So this just shows you the broad market indices, and you could see, you know, in every spectrum, you know, quarter to date, six months, fiscal year, year to date, rolling 1 year, there's a lot of negatives and big negatives. So our job here is obviously this fund has an existence of, you know, forever. That's what this thing needs to go on forever, for lack of a better term, or at least 30 years out. So our job is to just, you know, steady the ship and get through the storm and hopefully come out the other side, you know, less pain than most. So if you could scroll down to page 5, I believe, Taylor. I think that this actually does depict a better than average synopsis here. Funds about $182 million, obviously not near its high, but some thoughts of encouragement. If you could scroll down just a smidge, Taylor, just so you could see scroll up rather. There we go. Just so we could see what time frame we're looking at here. You know, you can see, you know, the dark blue line is the composite, and you can see 1 month, 3 month, fiscal year to date, and 1 year. So throughout this turmoil, we have bested all of our indices, you know, both passive and policy. And it's really difficult when we look at these funds and you say, okay, you know, typically in times of you know, market tumult, when markets are volatile, typically where you see safe haven is in what we always say, the sleep well asset, the bonds, the fixed income. But because of the very double-sided, you know, situation here, you know, we have equity selling off mainly because of inflation, and the Fed is fighting inflation by raising rates very, very aggressively and trying to choke off the demand to try to cool the inflation. And when we all remember, when rates go up, bond values go down. So our sleep well portion of the portfolio is also down. And it's not just ours. It's every fixed income asset class across the globe, both domestic bonds, international bonds, corporate government bonds, and some of these quote unquote sleep well assets are down double digits, well into the double digits, 10-12%. So when you look at the overall fund that's down over the past 1 year, under 14%, when some stocks are down 30, 40% or 20 or 30%, bonds are down 10 to 15%, we feel pretty good about that. And again, it's never fun to lose money, but our job here is to just try to weather the storm as best as possible. So down 13.75 for the rolling 1 year is better than we could hope for. We could look at some of the places that we, you know, some of the strategic moves. So, okay, how did that happen? Some of the strategic moves that we did, if you look at our large cap growth to value ratios, were 2-to-1 value over growth. So when these types of things happen, these scenarios in the marketplace, especially what's going on here, growth stocks got particularly more beaten up than value stocks. So fourth quarter last year, so before this interest rate hikes session started to happen, we overweighted value, underweighted growth. So that was one of the safe havens. You can see over the rolling 1 year, value's down 1178 versus 2116 on a 2-to-1 ratio. So that definitely helped. Another notable mention here, you know, typically mid and small cap stocks do worse because they, you know, especially growth oriented. You can look at our small cap core, you know, again, down well into the double digits, but you look at Fuller and Thaler, one of our active small cap manager, I just want to highlight, they've done well on the outperformance on the upside. They've also outperformed on the downside. And you can see that with they're down just under 17 versus their benchmark is down 23. So those are some of the bright spots of, you know, places that we've had some shelter, if you will. Next page shows fixed income. Again, you can look at international equity is down significantly. We had WCM in to talk about where their underperformance is coming from. But long-term, they still have an outperformance on the upside. We don't think there's any reason to put them on watch. We think their style of investing will come back into favor when this thing does settle. And we'll talk about that, you know, momentarily. Dolan McNeary, our domestic bond manager, again, mentioned bonds down. Look at, you know, the U.S. aggregate bond index is down 15, just under 15% for the year. For the 1 year, and Dolan McNeary is down under 10. So again, strong outperformance from our active bond manager there. International bonds, we had just hired LM Capital not too long ago. So, you know, again, they're just getting up and running, but you can see up, you know, non-government, non-world, non-US government bonds were down 28%. Our bonds were down 17. Again, it's really tough when both stocks and bonds go down. The next page just shows hedge funds. Alcyon, we had them in. Balyasny, which I just saw. If you could go up one page, Taylor, I'm sorry. Go back up to, back a page. Right here, just wanted to highlight Balyasny as well. Hedge fund, one of the hedge funds we have has done very well. So they've done what they're supposed to do. They've hedged against market volatility, and you can see that's held positive. So, again, another bright spot in the portfolio. Next page, please. So this just shows private equity, private real estate, and cash. A lot of these things have not been updated as of yet, so there's no sense to talk about that. But the one thing I do want to mention is just our equity, a private equity weighting is around just under 15%, which is right near our target. Real estate's a little underweight. We're at 6.5. We could talk about that. And then we have a little bit of cash on hand. What's nice about this is, you know, when we do get an influx of the ARC payment, we can, you know, rebalance this fund and take some advantage of some of the depressed values. Next page. Oh, one more page, I think, is what I'm looking at. Okay, so this is the page I just want to show you again. One of the things we do is we want to make sure that the fund is in line with its investment policy statement. And what this depicts is a different breakdown of different asset classes, our target rate, and the target ranges. So, you know, we have our target and then a range that's applicable, and then it shows what the difference is. And as you can see, we're underweight non-US equities, and that's obvious because of what's going on in the markets. We want to underweight non-US equities. We're underweight non-US fixed income. Again, that's also by intent. We're slightly overweight alternatives, and alternatives are anything that's neither stocks nor bonds. And we could talk about that in a moment, but you can see real estate, we're at a 6.5%. Our range is, our target's 5 and our range is 0 to 10. So we're slightly overweight our target, but we're well within our range. Also with, slightly overweight with cash, but all things being equal, we're in range with all of our investment policy guidelines. So that's one of the things that we want to highlight when we do speak. Taylor, if you could switch to the market talk, just a few points I want to make. So again, I'm not really going to read these things to you, but I just want to highlight, what's going on. And again, we've talked many times, and we've met many times this year. It's no secret that inflation is the key headline here, and inflation is something that the Fed has been trying to battle, and they're battling it very aggressively. And we have our thesis as to what's going to happen and how it's going to happen. But, the Fed's raising rates at 75 basis points at a time, which is 0.75%. That's very aggressive. Typically, you would hear the Fed over in the past history would raise 25 basis points to maybe 50 basis points. This market is set up for, another 75 basis point raise in November and more than likely another 75 basis points in December. So that is an aggressive rate hike, which the Fed is trying to cool inflation. And the Fed has been doing this. And now you have to remember, the way this is set up is pretty funny, because it's not funny. It's pretty peculiar because, the Fed raises rates, and that's kind of that's going to set something up for the future. So the inflation reading that we're getting is in arrears. So we just had a inflation surprise to the upside at this most recent reading. You can see that was a negative surprise. Inflation's still running. It's still hot. So that is basically saying we're going to still have a very hawkish Fed all the way through this year, more than likely even first quarter of next year. And what that's doing is obviously putting extreme pressure on equities, especially growth-oriented equities. Those are considered the longest duration equities. And so you see that volatility right in the equity markets. But again, fixed income is no safe haven, because these rates, when you have the Fed rate go from 1% to 3.25% and potentially up to 5%, I mean, we're anticipating it might be a 5% rate before the Fed eases their rate hikes. So that's a very, very aggressive stance to choke off this inflationary pressure. But some of the things that we look at in the future say, okay, if we fight inflation, that's going to push us into a particular recession. And there's only three tools the Fed has to use to control. There's three levers the Fed can pull, and it's obviously interest rate hikes or cuts. It's monetary policy, quantitative easing, or withdrawal of quantitative easing, and their third goal is to monitor unemployment. So as for right now, unemployment is in line. Inflation is still high, and rates are continuing to go up. Eventually, where are the bright spots? Eventually, we are going to be pushed into a recessionary environment. Hopefully, inflation will be cut off, and then we will look for a rate cut cycle at some point. That's not soon. But when the rate cut cycle does happen to kind of spur the economy and pull us out of hopefully what we think is a shallow recession, that will be an opportunity for this fund to invest more heavily in equities, excuse me, because that would act more of as a tailwind rather than a headwind. But I'll scroll through a few charts here just to kind of depict what we're talking about. If you could scroll to the next page, please, Taylor. So this just talks about, again, the inflationary pressures, they remain stubbornly high. And you can see core CPI. So core CPI is ex-energy. So that's, food and energy is stripped out of the core CPI. So that's just pure inflationary pressures. So that's at a new high, and it continues to go up. The bottom right-hand corner, you can see the market-implied Fed funds rate. So as we talk about the glide path, you can see we're looking at another couple big rate hikes before the end of the year. That's going to push us potentially up to, right now it's at 3.25. We think we might stop around 5, basically the way things are going here. at 75 basis point increments. I mean, that those are very, very strong rate increases. Next page. So again, this just shows inflationary pressure. And then what we look at is what we call a leading indicator is are some of these non-farm small business intentions. So compensation plans, price plans, typically that is, you know, works in line with inflation. And as you can see, the red line are those data points. And you can see those are starting to trend down. We hope that this will be a beginning of a trend down in inflation. But again, we don't know that that's going to happen immediately, but that's hopefully where the trend's going to lead. Next page, please. So one of the things here we look at is, okay, stocks have sold off tremendously. And we look at, you know, valuations on stocks. So when's a good time to buy? Where are valuations? Are we overpriced, underpriced? We were, you know, overpriced prior to this correction or this bear market. And you look at earnings per share and earnings revisions. And basically we're in earnings season right now, started on Friday. And some companies are beating, but what we're looking at is the number of companies beating earnings estimates versus the overall averages. Prior to this rate inflationary pressure cycle that we're in, we had about, you know, typically 70 to 80% of companies beating estimates. Now we're down to about 50% of companies beating estimates. So that is a bearish signal. And we think ultimately what happens, you know, these companies come out and revise earnings reports down and guidance downward. So over time, those revisions go down, and that's depicted in the lower left-hand corner. As those revisions come down, eventually we'll start to see a turn in those, and we'll see companies starting to beat earnings estimates, and that would be ultimately a bullish signal, but we're not there yet. Next page, please. Again, this just further depicts valuations. And some of the things that we look at here, you have to remember the economy and finance are two different things. So what's happening in the financial markets is a precursor for what's going to happen in the economy, typically 6 to 9 months ahead. So one of the things we're looking at are PE multiples, historical averages, and where is, quote unquote, the bottom. And we think we're definitely closer to the bottom than we were, you know, a few months ago, but we may or may not be there just yet. You know, depending on the S&P, where there is some sort of bounce happening here. Market reversed this morning. It was up pre-market. Now it's negative. So there's definitely going to be some increased volatility, trying to find a bottom, but the bottoming process is typically somewhat painful, and there should be some capitulation hopefully soon. But we think we're closer to the bottom than we have been, and we're not quite there yet. Next page. So this just depicts it graphically. I like to look at these charts, and you could look at the upper left-hand corner. So we look at things from an earnings per share and a price to earnings multiple level, and then we also look at technically, you know, ranges. Stocks tend to trade in ranges, and you can see this range here. There's a pretty strong support right around that 3,500 level with the S&P, and we've tested it. We've broken through it, but we have successfully rebounded on the upside. So there's a key area of support around 3,400, 3,500. Worst case scenario, we're seeing we could possibly go down to 3,000 on the S&P, 3,000 to 3,200, which is, you know, the 10 to 12% from here. We're hoping that doesn't happen. But again, a lot of this is dependent on economics. So is the economy going to cool? Is inflation going to, you know, start to subside a little bit? A lot of this momentum in the stock market is very, very dependent upon economic data. So as this data comes in, I think the market will digest it. We just don't know how much of it is digested yet in the market and how much is actually already built into the prices. We think quite a bit of it is built into the price of the market, but we're not really sure how much more. So the downtrend still remains. Volatility is still going to be here for a while. We don't see any really strong, bright opportunities in the near future. Next page. You know, again, this just depicts bond yields. So this is what I talked about, you know, earlier, you know, as bond yields go up, you know, stocks go down. So, and it's just depicted on the chart on the right. You know, blue is real rates. So that's after inflation. You can see the real rates are going up and S&P value is going down, and it's pretty much an inverse correlation. So again, data dependent, you know, a lot of these stocks are very solidly valued. So you look at some tremendous value in the stock market. So that's a good thing for this fund long-term. When we do get this infusion of capital from the ARC payment, we're going to be very patient. But when there is opportunity, and opportunity is going to present itself, we will be in a great position to capture that and buy long-term for these stocks, because stocks that we were buying at a much higher multiple, we'll be able to buy basically on sale and get some very good long-term growth opportunities with these funds. Next page, please. I don't need to spend a lot of time here. This just shows some of the defensive aerospace and machinery. What was, you know, safe havens are starting to wane a little bit, but that's one small bright spot. Next page. So this is, again, we could skip this. This is just talking about defensive stocks. We don't need to speak about this at the moment. So that basically is it in synopsis. So basically the theme that we're trying to convey is that it's going to be, you know, rates are going to be keep going up. That's going to keep pressure on bonds. It's going to keep pressure on stocks, at least through the end of the year. We're cautiously optimistic for, you know, early next year, calendar year, for some opportunities. But we will start to, you know, when we do get an influx of capital, we will obviously speak to everybody here on what our plan is. But for now, we're going to be very patient. We have opportunities that we haven't seen in many, many years for long-term growth prospects of the fund. In the meantime, we'll take shelter where we can, you know, rely on our active managers to help buffer the downside and just be very patient and steadfast with our plan. With that said, that's all I have to say. If anybody has any questions or any discussions, certainly we're here to chat.
Hi, Derek.
Yes, Mark.
You were mentioning before bottoming out. Is there a rate that's more favorable? Is the race to the bottom? If we go at a slower speed, does that mean that things are improving, or the speed of the decline really doesn't matter?
So there's a lot of potential signals. I think I understand your question, Mark. I'll try to do my best to answer it. There are a lot of signals that we look at for, you know, bottoming, if you will, capitulation. When is the bottom? And again, nobody could really predict the future. But some of the things we look at is we look at, you know, there's something called an advanced decline line. What that is more stocks making upside than downside. So the quantity, the number of stocks, and you see those types of things happening. Obviously, you know, this market is very, very data dependent on inflation, very, very data dependent on the Fed. So obviously that's going to be a clear signal when the Fed, as soon as the Fed has any sort of dovish comments in his speech, you'll see the market soar. Just because we say, okay, the end of this squeeze is near. And it's pretty ironic because the Fed put, you know, incredible levels of liquidity in the market during COVID. And it was injected very quickly with unhistorical levels of liquidity, and rates were at or near zero. And now the exact opposite, and equities soared. The exact opposite is happening now. The Fed is acting somewhat of a vacuum, and it's raising rates, it's sucking liquidity out of the market, and that's putting pressure on all of these things. When that ceases, Mark, I think that in and of itself is going to be a buying time. It's going to be, okay, the Fed is going to have some sort of dovish commentary. The end is near, so to speak. That in and of itself will be an opportunity. Also, from a pure valuations, we look at historical lows, and you look at PE multiples, and that S&P 500 at 3,000 would be a historical low average for price to earnings multiples. So if we get there, that would be a tremendous buying opportunity. So right now we're kind of muddling around that 34 to 37 range on the S&P, 3,400 to 3,700. That's, you know, there could be, when I say a lot more volatility. Yeah, can you read that? Or, you know, as we see, we'll see more volatility in those ranges, that 36 to 3400. But we'll see signals that will let us know that, okay, the bottom is here, capitulation. But really, the real precipice of a turn is the Fed action. That's really the only thing that's pushing these markets right now. I mean, a lot of these companies are still earning money. They're still solid companies. You know, we're in much better shape than we were in the dot-com bubble and the financial crisis. These companies have better balance sheets. They're actually earning money. Banks are very solvent. So from an underlying corporate structure standpoint, these stocks are in pretty good shape. It's just a matter now of momentum and economics.
Can you speak directly to that Alkian growth of fund where that 1 year number is a minus 40?
Yeah.
And their fiscal year to date number is a minus 454, where they're basically doing a little better than the world index.
Yeah.
Does that tell us anything?
Yeah. So, you know, if you remember, we had Alex come in and talk. You know, Alkian was a very, you know, and again, I always say this, you know, smart money doesn't get dumb overnight. Those folks over at Alkian are incredibly, incredibly intelligent. Their research is, you know, I think second to none. They are very growth technology oriented, if you recall their mm-hmm. Their philosophy. So what's happened is that they've actually, you know, the growth oriented stocks. So when you look at, you know, what stocks react when the Fed raises rates. So growth stocks, so stocks that don't pay dividends, technology stocks, things that are growthy are considered the longest duration asset class. So in other words, long duration bonds, they are the riskiest stocks to be in. Whether they could be the most innovative company making the most money. Look at Amazon and Google and Apple. These companies, and those are, you know, publicly traded companies. Those companies, because they don't, well, Apple pays a dividend, but the other ones don't pay dividends, they're considered long duration stocks. Those stocks were sold regardless of how well their company's doing. And Alkian got caught up in that just because of their style of investing is growth oriented and the fact that they utilize leverage. So we feel comfortable, you know, again, they are on watch. We feel comfortable with their thesis and where they're going long-term. And to your point, yes, they are starting. It looks like they're starting to turn the corner a little bit because all the pain that's felt in those sectors seems to be subsiding. And that was in some of the things that we were going to talk about is, you know, that's another signal that you're talking about, Mark. Defensive stocks, utility stocks, defensive consumer discretionary stocks. A lot of the defensive stocks are starting to turn now, which is one small indication that, okay, you know, growth stocks might be more valued, better valued. The defensive stocks are less in favor now. So that is a signal that, you know, there is some pockets of positive tailwind in the growthier stocks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I was saying thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you as well. And then again, I just wanted to touch base because the last couple meetings that we talked about bringing in some private equity firms, we are still working on getting solidifying some. So I know we're not scheduled to speak for another 3 months, but I'm sure we will have some managers to present prior to that. So with your permission, I will, you know, obviously be in contact with Leanna's office. If we do have some money manager presentations lined up, I will, you know, hopefully see you again soon before 3 months.
Okay.
With that said, thank you.
Thank you, Derek. Okay, let's try administrative matters. Bigmar, Fonte, and Old. Nancy, are you here?
Good morning. Good morning. There you Can go. You hear me?
Yes.
I apologize. I had difficulty with the video, so I thought it was safer to call in. So sorry for the delay. Good morning, all. This is Nancy Kalesa with Blake Marfanti and Ald. And I just wanted to provide a brief semi-annual update for 2022 on securities litigation and claims filing for your fund. We have identified a number of cases in the first half of 2022, five to be exact, which impact your fund. I'll just run through them briefly, and then I'll tell you a little bit about the ones, particularly the ones where you have larger losses, and then I'll discuss the claims that we filed on behalf of your fund. The case in which the fund has incurred the largest loss, and these are all on investments that you have in equities, is a case called Dentsply Sirona. And in that case, it looks like the fund incurred losses of about $331,000. So that's actually quite a large loss. We are monitoring that case for the fund. I'll tell you a little bit about it in a minute. Another case that we identified is called Natera. In that case, it looks like the fund lost about $32,000. Another case we identified is called Energy Transfers. Now, depending upon how losses are calculated, the fund lost between $10,000 and $130,000. The reason for that huge differential is depending upon how the losses are calculated. And under the calculation where it's only $10,000, that's basically looking at losses on a basis where the loss is attributable to the fraud or to the misrepresentations that are alleged in the action. So in a case like that, in all of these cases, for that matter, we'll monitor them and, you know, there'll be a plan of allocation at some point, which figures out how losses are calculated. But there's quite a differential there, depending upon how the losses are calculated. There are two other cases. One is called Digital Turbine, in which the fund lost about $15,000. And another is New Oriental Education and Technology, in which the firm lost about $12,000. So I just wanted to talk briefly about some of the larger cases. Dentsply Sirona is a case pending in the Southern District of Ohio. We think this is a particularly strong case. It's a case involving the world's largest manufacturer of professional dental products. And in this case, it looks like the company executives engaged in a scheme to inflate the share price and earnings. And the interesting part here is that looks like the executives had some incentive-based compensation plans whereby, you know, they were compensated for larger sales and numbers. And so basically during COVID, they were saying that they had, record revenues, and it looks like this was attributable to stuffing the channels, and they're basically doing that by pushing out products using rebate programs, and then what would happen is people would get rebates and they would return the product, or they would say they didn't need any more product because they already had vast amounts of product. So in this case, the CEO actually resigned and the CFO was suddenly terminated. The company had no succession plan in place for its leadership. So it looks like there are a lot of kind of facts that look like, they were really engaging in some malfeasance. There's an SEC investigation. And interestingly, this is a case in which, we're watching it for your fund. We had a fund that lost in excess of $2 million. They actually moved to be appointed as lead plaintiff in the case. That is still pending. So we'll certainly be watching that for your fund. Another case I just want to touch on briefly is called Natera. That's another particularly strong case. And this case involves a company that provided genetic testing and also some testing related to kidney transplants. And the allegations in that case are basically that the company made untrue statements about the accuracy of all of its tests. And so basically they experienced revenue growth, but it looks like it was really fueled by deceptive sales and billing practices aimed at doctors and insurance companies. There are investigations against this company by the Michigan Attorney General. The FDA issued warnings about many categories of the company's products. And to top that off, there was a Delaware court that actually had a verdict that said that the company and senior executives had basically intentionally misled the transplant community by engaging in false advertising and marketing of some of its products. So all told, in that case, some of these disclosures came out over time, and more than $2.5 billion in shareholder value was erased. So these are two cases we find particularly strong. The others we're watching for you. Energy Transfer basically involved an unrealistic timeline for the construction of a pipeline to transfer natural gas. And it looks like, you know, this is another one where there's an investigation. News came out that basically all of their timelines were unrealistic, and there were government investigations involving some of its environmental impact and compliance with environmental laws. So that case is probably less strong than the other two, because a lot of it involves, you know, hypotheticals like government investigations. But we're watching that one for you. Two others: New Oriental Technology, a for-profit education company that basically inflated its enrollment. That's a case where you have a much smaller loss, but we're watching that for you also. And Digital Turbine, a case with a similarly smaller loss, basically a company that made some misrepresentations about some acquisitions and the value of certain companies that they were acquiring. Just to touch briefly, in the first half of 2022, we had filed a claim for you in a case that settled called Trinity Securities Litigation. We did receive a recovery there of, I believe it was $115,000 that was returned to you. We are monitoring a number of cases that have claims deadlines in early 2023. We are evaluating the fund's exposure in those cases, and we'll be filing claims in accordance with the deadlines. And some of those deadlines, I believe there's one involving a bank bill swap derivative case. There's a deadline in January, so we are in the process of filing a claim for you. And we just basically continue to monitor all new cases that are filed and all settlements, and file claims on your behalf as these settlements come in. So that's basically our update in a nutshell. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Mario Zangari, I have a question. Since we've hired your firm, how much have you been able to obtain, and how much of that has gone, have been paid to the pension fund for New Haven City employees?
Sure. I don't have that figure in front of me, but I could certainly provide it. There were a number of settlements that we did make claims for since, I believe, the beginning of maybe, or mid 2020. I don't have that number in front of me, but I could certainly provide it to you. And in terms of the fee, basically when we file a claim for you in a settlement, it's money that you wouldn't have. And what we do is we charge a very small percent. I believe it's like 5% of what we recover. I'm not even sure. I can find out what we've billed you. It's really minimal, but I can certainly provide that information for you.
I asked two questions. Basically, one was, how much were the gross settlements during this period, and what was your fee? That was very simple.
Okay, I believe our fee is 5%, and I can get you the figure on the gross settlement recovery. I don't have that in front of me right now.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I believe, did I see a hand up? Okay. I don't see a hand up. Are there any other questions? Trustees? Any old business? I see a question, Carolyn, at this time. Can we take questions from the public?
If you wish, it's up to you. Sure.
Trustees? Trustees?
If there's questions from the public, we should answer them.
Okay, I am seeing a hand up from C. Poindexter.
Morning, how are you?
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Good.
I don't have a question per se. My comment is in regards to a matter that just occurred in regards to an ordinance that was passed by the city of New Haven. Is this, I would like to discuss that and read a letter to the board. I will then submit the letter to, I think Taylor is the secretary, and which she can then give you the letter to each board member. I think it's very important. What has just occurred, it has a very negative impact on the fund. Can I read my letter now?
Yes.
Okay. On October 3rd, the Board of Aldermen passed an ordinance to allow to multiply the multiplier for the pension fund and also give an increased salary to three employees. I believe this will impact more than three employees. It will impact multiple employees that and a big impact on the pension fund. So my letter will read as follows. On October 3rd, the New Haven Board of Alder voted to increase the salary and pension benefits for three city employees, budget director, chief technology officer, and manager of human resources. This was at the request of the manager of human resources, who suggested such action was necessary to attract qualified candidates for the position. However, the current labor market suggests difficulty in recruiting and adequately compensating frontline workers, not administrative positions. In fact, govsalaries.com already ranked our city employees' average salary 15% higher and medium salary 25% higher than the rest of the country. Current participants in the XERF plan include the employees of Local 3144, 884, 287, 71, 68, 1303, 467, 1303, 464, 217, 21, 11, 90, 777, which are the trades, and executive management. However, the stated increase in yearly pension liability of only $52,000 is based on just one currently filled position and at the current salary. The approved salary cap would increase these former union members' position salaries anywhere from 30 to 50%, while other employees' contract increase average less than 3%. Maximum salaries with double pension multipliers would increase a 20-year employee's yearly pension in the above position by more than 200%. After 20 years, the percentage would be even higher. In May 2018, the Board of Alders created a pension task force, essentially charged with determining how changes impact the pension. The task force was not consulted prior to the Alders' action. In addition, an annual determined employees' contribution report and an actual required contribution ARC report performed by actuary was not conducted to show that $52,000 figure to be substantially low and the actual impact on the fund. This is important because in the last 3 years, pension funds have dropped from 49% to 37%. It is clear our pension is already underfunded with a rate of return that is higher than our country average. Also based on the three job descriptions with the majority of the same activities carried out by the department level, it is difficult to justify reclassifying these positions as key personnel. Finally, government pension plans require current and new employees' contributions for plan survival. Any suggestion of eliminating employees from the plan will ultimately lead to substantial issues, and as seen throughout the country, we have proposed legal action against the municipality. Based upon the above information, it is clear that this legislation could only result in higher costs to the city, taxpayers, and unsustainable costs to the pension plan, neither of which is in the best interest of New Haven. I ask that, I'm asking, because I'm going to write, I wrote a letter to the Board of Aldermen as well. So I'm asking the Board of Aldermen and the mayor to rescind this ordinance. I'm asking that the pension board do not implement these changes without exercising due diligence, including doing a current actuary report and requiring the city of New Haven to pay any additional contribution costs up front. On behalf of myself and undersigned retirees, I would appreciate a written response to this request. Sincerely, Sherilyn Poindexter. And I will send this, I will email this letter to Taylor so each of you will have a copy of it. And I don't know if you have any questions.
Trustees, any questions? Thank you, Ms. Poindexter. Please
thank you.
That letter to Taylor. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate you letting me speak. Thank you.
You're welcome. Are there any more questions? New business? Any new business?
I have just Mario and Gary, Kathy. Do we have any control here on the city making any of these appointments?
I don't think so. Carolyn?
No, absolutely not.
That's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure I wasn't stepping out of line here.
And to the extent that they're not current SURF members, they would not join SURF. The executive management since 2008 do not join SURF unless they come up through the ranks, you know, as a SURF member. So if they're from outside, they
can't even get in our plan, correct?
That's correct. Since 2008, unless, you know, they rise through the ranks. And
but we don't know who these people are, so we can't judge whether they're going to be in the plan or not.
That's correct.
Okay.
But we don't have any authority over this issue.
Kathy, is that your understanding too?
You know, I am not 100% clear, but I don't think we have any control over those appointments.
That's correct.
If they're already in.
There's a chat came through from Ms. Poindexter saying they're already members of the plan.
So that's something that.
But we don't have any control over this issue.
Okay, I see another hand up. Gilda Herrera. Gilda? Your hand is up.
Can you hear me?
No. Not barely.
Can you hear me now?
A little bit better.
All right.
Just speak up.
Yes. I have to agree. Those members, if you look at those positions, those three positions are to come up through the ranks. So some of these folks are actually already part of the plan. That is correct. That they will be able to join. Because if you look at how it was written, those positions were written that you had to rise to the ranks to actually be able to fill those positions.
Okay. Carolyn?
No, I'm just not familiar with this, but the filling of positions is not within our jurisdiction. And once the Board of Alders passes a pension ordinance and it's signed by the mayor, and properly published, we must
enforce it. We don't have authority not to enforce it.
And no steps haven't been taken yet?
What did you say, Mario?
The steps haven't been taken for us to make a decision. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know if the mayor has signed this ordinance. It was passed, I guess, they said on October 3rd. Usually the mayor takes a couple weeks before he signs the ordinance. He's not here, so. But once it's signed and published, we must enforce it. And we have no jurisdiction over who gets hired and what their salaries are.
Okay, so this is for next meeting, possibly.
It's up to, you know, the board, whether they want to consider this. This is nothing that's within their authority to be involved in.
So there's absolutely nothing we can do?
Correct.
Okay. Let's see. We do have the authority to make sure the city pays the additional cost. The additional cost of
everyone?
The additional cost to the ARC, because if this, if they're doubling somebody's multiplier and increasing their salary, there is a cost to that. It's a yearly cost to the ARC itself. I don't know what you, if you just did an actuary study recently, I think you did the one in July, but it's not published yet. And say the ARC is, I'm just going to take a guess because you do not have, I noticed that the reports that Derek does are not online, so you can't pull those up. But say the ARC for SURF is $30 million. So these changes may cost the city another $2 million or $1 million. The city should be putting that money in up front, whatever that money is that it costs for these additional changes for these 3P positions, because these are people who are coming up in the ranks who are currently employed there. And you don't know if this is going to open up a can of worms for other members that are like special fund members that have been trying to get buy time as well and to get their time in the pension. So this is going to be a domino effect. It's going to negatively impact our pension fund. And I understand you keep saying that there's nothing we can do when the city passes something, but you do have the responsibility to the fund to make sure the fund is good. And if these changes negatively impact the fund, then the city needs to make sure they put in the right amount of money and stop underfunding our pension. Our rate of return is 7.25%. Everywhere around the country, everybody's rate of return is 6% or less. So they're not paying the right correct amount currently. So these changes will even make it worse.
Madam Chair, can I make a statement?
Yes.
So I just want to make a clarification on this ordinance in regards to the positions. I keep hearing that we have to hire those three positions from within the ranks based on the ordinance, and that is not the case. The mayor has the authority to hire outside of those positions, which then, if you hire outside of those positions, they will go into the executive management defined contribution plan, like all outside executive management positions. The ordinance applies to people who move up through the ranks who are hired within those positions. So I want to make that clear. If you're a union member and you're hired into one of those positions, then that's where the ordinance would apply. But if someone from the outside is hired, then they would go into the defined contribution plan, not the SURF plan. The hiring rules for executive management did not change. The ordinance applies to people who came up through the union ranks into those positions. So I just want to make that clear.
Any additional questions, comments? I don't see any hands. Would someone like to move to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn. Michael,
I second. Mario Zingari, second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mario Zingari, aye.
Michael Gormley, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Kathy Graves, aye. Until next month, I will see you. Yeah. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.